Good evening. Trump doubles down on delaying the November election. No deal on the stimulus as the clock ticks. Fauci says expect a vaccine next year and a plan to reopen New York schools. With these and other stories, I'm Paul D'Arienzo with the news for Friday, July 31st, 2020. And one of the Boston Marathon bombers was spared the death penalty for now. A federal appeals court said the judge in the case did not adequately screen jurors for potential biases. U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals ordered a new penalty phase trial on Jokhar Tsarnaev. Should he be executed? To see if he should be executed for the 2013 attack that killed three people and wounded more than 260 others. The judges added in their decision, Jokhar will spend his remaining days locked up in prison no matter the decision. Defense attorneys argues the 27-year-old was influenced by his older brother Tamerlan Tsarnaev, who masterminded the attack. In its decision, the court noted several jurors expressed strong opinions before the trial, including one who tweeted the defendant was a piece of garbage. And President Trump has gotten heavy criticism overnight from a new quarter, his own party. GOP officials from New Hampshire to Mississippi to Iowa are pushing back against Trump's suggestion it might be necessary to delay the November election. He blames an unfounded threat of voter fraud.
And we're going to do very well in the election. Nobody wants that date more than me. I wish we'd move it up, okay? Move it up. But you're not prepared for what they're doing. And they're using COVID, you know, they're using the China virus. China must be very happy about it because they hit us with a virus and now they screw up an election like you. You will never see. You watch what happens. I don't think you'll ever give me any statement. I guess Trump was right, but the people know I'm right. Watch what happens. They're not prepared. You watch. They're not going to announce anything on November 3rd. They're not going to announce it on the 4th or the 5th or the 6th. It'll go on forever. This will be catastrophic for our nation. And you'll see it. I'm always right about things like this. I guess I must be. I wouldn't be sitting here.
And as President Trump, the Republican opposition isn't expected to seriously challenge Trump. GOP candidates are wedded to Trump's base and to have any chance of winning. Meanwhile, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, a Democrat, says it's Trump who's trying to suppress voter turnout to stop a growing blue wave from sweeping him out of office.
I respect the office of the presidency, and the president doesn't. And just every single day, he degrades the office that he took an oath to serve in. Right now, we have a situation where going into polling places, having to stand in line for hours, and do people keep the distance and all the rest. Now, the president is making a distinction between absentee and vote by mail. I rest my case. It's the same thing. You mail it in. What they want to do is diminish the money for the post office because if you mail in your ballot and it has a stamp, then they have to date that. And they don't necessarily do it in a timely fashion because they just don't have the personnel. And there's a method to their madness. So understand this. They want to cancel the election or postpone the election. Really? Did he learn that from Putin or something? They want to diminish the capacity of the postal system to work in a timely fashion. And we do know that Russia is interfering again in our elections, and there may be other foreign governments that are trying to intervene. So we need to protect the security of our electoral system, and we have to give people the opportunity to vote the way they want to vote, whether that's in person or by mail.
And that's House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. An investigation by the Associated Press found surprising agreement with Trump's assessment of absentee voting from a surprising source, potential black voters, many who believe mailed-in ballots are never really counted. In Georgia, roughly 12,000 mail-in ballots were rejected in the state's June primary, while California tossed more than 100,000 absentee ballots during its March primary. In Wisconsin's April primary, thousands of voters in Milwaukee said they didn't receive absentee ballots in time, and in Kentucky's June primary, more than 8,000 absentee ballots were rejected. And throughout the world, coronavirus has sent national leaders scrambling to stop an unprecedented slide in economic growth caused by the coronavirus pandemic. Germany, Japan, Malaysia, and Kazakhstan are all planning to spend trillions to keep their economies afloat. But in the United States, a stimulus package is at the heart of a bitter dispute, leaving millions of unemployed Americans facing evictions and food shortages as the U.S. economy contracted by 30%. Today, the White House and the Republicans seem to be retreating from opposition to extending the $600 per week supplemental unemployment benefit that is slated to end tonight. The two sides took their case to the media Friday morning, with White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows speaking to reporters on short notice.
Democrats believe that they have all the cards on their side, and they're willing to play those cards at the expense of those that are hurting. And we'll continue on with additional discussions today with Senator Schumer and Speaker Pelosi, perhaps an in-person meeting tomorrow on Capitol Hill. They are bumping the price higher than the very bill that they passed out of the House several weeks ago. So we call on Capitol Hill to get serious about their negotiations. The president is serious about the negotiations. Leader McConnell yesterday put forth a one-week extension at the current levels for enhanced unemployment. And what did we see? Senator Schumer objected to that.
White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi appeared at her weekly news conference at the same moment as Meadows. She struck back at a GOP plan to extend the $600 payments by 1 week to allow more time for negotiations.
What are you going to do in a week? What are you going to do in a week? That is, first of all, they don't even have the votes for it in the Senate. Let's get real about who says what. We passed a bill 10 weeks ago. It was bipartisan. We passed a bill over 10 weeks ago. They couldn't even get a shell bill. They couldn't even get $200, which we totally reject. They couldn't even pass something like that among their own members. Forget 60 votes. Talk 51 votes. So it's no use. Why don't we just get the job done? Why don't we just get the job done? And there's just the only accommodation that such a bill is if you're on the path. We're not.
And that's House Speaker Pelosi. At issue is $1 trillion for funding for state and local governments, a second $1,200 direct payment to most adults, more than $100 billion to help schools reopen, and a liability shield measure that is essential to Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. Democrats also want a boost in food stamp benefits, while Republicans added $20 billion for agribusinesses, but nothing for greater food stamp benefits. But even as the politicians haggle, Trump is following his own instincts. Yesterday, he dismissed Democrats' demand for aid to cities struggling with the coronavirus, even as he supported extending unemployment benefits. And the virus continues its surge in the South and West. Florida reported a record increase in new COVID-19 deaths for a fourth day in a row, with 257 fatalities. Mississippi also reported a record increase in deaths on Friday. In the nation, deaths have increased by nearly 25,000 since July to 153,000 total lives lost since the pandemic started. Nationally, about one person dies each minute from the disease. Today, the Select Committee on the Coronavirus Crisis, chaired by Representative James Clyburn, heard from Dr. Anthony Fauci, CDC Director Dr. Robert Redfield, and Assistant Secretary for Health Admiral Brett Giroir on the need for a national comprehensive plan to address the coronavirus pandemic. Representative Clyburn began the questioning.
Dr. Fauci, on March 11th of this year, you testified before the Oversight Committee saying, and I quote, "It's going to get worse." I regret to say you were right. It did get worse. On March 11th, the country had confirmed just over 1,200 cases and 31 deaths. Today, we have confirmed more than 4.4 million cases, and we have just reached 150,000 deaths. Dr. Fauci, can you help us understand why?
The answer to that question is really somewhat complex, but I'll try If you look at what happened in Europe when they shut down or locked down or went to shelter in place, however you want to describe it, they really did it to the tune of about 95%+ of the country did that. When you actually look at what we did, even though we shut down, even though it created a great deal of difficulty, we really functionally shut down only about 50% in the sense of the totality of the country, which means when we reached our peak, we came up, down, and then we plateaued at about 20,000 cases a day. So we started off with a very difficult baseline of transmission that was going on at the time that we tried to open up the country. And when we opened up the country, what we saw, particularly most recently in the southern states, was an increase of cases to 20, 30, 40, 50, and a couple of weeks ago it was up to 70,000 per day, and now it's down between 50 and 60. And the reasons for that are complex. There were some states that did it very well, and there are some states that did not. We put out the guidelines of a gateway, phase one, phase two, phase three. Some were followed very carefully and some were not. And in those situations in which it were not, that led to the surging. And one of the reasons is not doing some of the things, universal wearing of masks, avoiding crowds, physical distancing, et cetera, et cetera. And hopefully, as we're going forward, we can turn those around. And I do believe we can, Mr. Chairman.
Fauci did offer hope of a vaccine. He said development is moving fast and he sees early next year as a target date.
Is it dreaming or is that a reality? Are the protocols as safe as they possibly could be for, as we've always had for vaccines? Could you give us an honest assessment of where our country is in vaccine development?
Yeah, it's reality, Congresswoman Maloney. I believe it will occur. I think the difference between HIV and coronavirus is so different that I don't think you can compare them, because the body does not make a very good immune response against HIV, so it makes vaccine development very difficult, whereas the body does make a robust immune response against coronavirus, which tells us that I believe that we can get to that goal. I know to some people this seems like it is so fast that there might be compromising of safety and in scientific integrity, and I can tell you that is absolutely not the case. The rapidity with which we're doing it is as a result of very different technologies in getting from the time we recognized this pathogen in the beginning of January to the time we were able to get into a phase one trial, to the time we were able to do phase two, and then, as I mentioned, just this past Monday, we started a phase three. That was not reckless rushing. That was technology and doing things in a way that does not compromise any of the steps. So I believe it is realistic, as I mentioned in my opening statement, that the early data from the phase one trial shows that this candidate, and I'm sure other candidates, will do it also. This is not the only vaccine. There are more than one. There are about a dozen, five or six, that the federal government is actively involved with, is going into phase three trials over the next few months, as I mentioned, one of which is already in. The response that was induced was really quite favorable. And as I've said often, and I'll repeat it for the record now, there's never a guarantee that you're going to get a safe and effective vaccine. But from everything we've seen now in the animal data, as well as the early human data, we feel cautiously optimistic that we will have a vaccine by the end of this year and as we go into 2021. So I don't think it's dreaming, Congresswoman. I believe it's a reality and will be shown to be a reality.
And that is Dr. Anthony Fauci, Representative Carolyn Maloney, asking the questions. The White House vaccine development program, known as Operation Warp Speed, is pouring billions into pharmaceutical companies. Two pharma giants, Sanofi and GlaxoSmithKline, announced yesterday a government contract for $2.1 billion to speed up vaccine manufacturing, raising the question, who will get the vaccine when it's ready?
If we have, and I think we will have, a safe and effective vaccine, that Americans will be able to get it. I don't think that they will have everybody getting it immediately in the beginning. It probably will be phased in, and that's the reason why we have the committees to do the prioritization of who should get it first. But ultimately, within a reasonable period of time, the plans now allow for any American who needs a vaccine to get it within the year 2021.
Right, and that is the plan. Right. Staying on the topic of vaccines, Dr. Fauci, it's my understanding that Operation Warp Speed enabled clinical trials for the most promising vaccine candidates to be run simultaneously, which will get a vaccine to the market much faster than normal. So the folks that are watching this are hearing this clearly, concisely, and truthfully from you. The FDA is not compromising safety standards in order to speed up vaccine process approval, right. Correct?
We at the NIH are doing the vaccine studies with the companies. The FDA will look at that data and on a science-based decision will make a determination as to the safety and efficacy and whether or not it will be approved. So the FDA is a science-based decision maker.
We but as far as you know in that, I agree, but the FDA is not compromising safety standards.
No.
No way, no how. No way, no how is the FDA compromising safety standards.
No.
And their answers and their approvals are based on science.
Yeah. Historically, the FDA has based their decisions on science. They will do it this time also, I'm certain.
I appreciate it.
While the search continues for a vaccine, testing and tracing coronavirus cases has become the focus of governments battling the disease. President Trump has been touting the number of coronavirus tests despite reports of delays and shortages in hotspots. Representative Nydia Velazquez says her constituents, spanning the Lower East Side and parts of Brooklyn, are complaining of 2 weeks' waits for test results. She asked Fauci directly if poor communities are being left out.
I want to get back to the delays in testing. Researchers at the University of Pennsylvania recently found that testing sites serving communities of color in big cities are fewer in number, have longer lines, and often run out of tests faster when compared to sites in wider areas in those same cities. We have the president that says, slow down testing, please. And the most vulnerable among us are being impacted. Frontline workers, small businesses that cannot reopen safely, and Black and Latino populations. Dr. Fauci, do you attribute this inability to control the virus to the delays in testing and contact tracing?
Testing is a part of the process, but the process of controlling infection, when you're talking about contact tracing, obviously you need testing, and you need testing back within a reasonable period of time. And the concern that you're expressing is for the days that it takes. Testing is a part of the comprehensive approach, not the only thing, sure, but as part of the approach.
Thank you. Are we seeing more COVID 19 cases in the U.S. because of the testing results?
If you do more testing, you're going to see more cases.
Okay.
But the increases that we're seeing are real increasing in cases, as also reflected by increasing in hospitalization and increasing in deaths.
Why is that professional sport leagues can get testing turnaround times within 24 hours, but we cannot do it for all Americans?
Well, some of the sports clubs have been using the rapid test, which is really very different from the test that requires extraction of DNA and takes time in a different machine. So they have bought a bunch of machines that allow testing to take place where you get a positive back in 5 minutes and you could declare negative in 15 minutes.
And that's Dr. Fauci responding to questions from Representative Nydia Velazquez. The lack of bipartisanship was evident throughout the hearing. Republicans and Democrats sniped at each other over the administration's response to the pandemic. Ohio Republican Jim Jordan asked why protesters aren't being arrested while some churches are shuttered.
So you're allowed to protest millions of people on one day in crowds yelling, screaming, but you try to run your business, you get arrested. And if you stood right outside of that same business and protested, you wouldn't get arrested. You don't see an inconsistency there?
I don't understand what you're asking me as a public health official to opine on who should get arrested or not. That's not my position. You could ask
no,
it as much as you want.
You've advocated for certain businesses. You've advocated for certain businesses to be shut down. I'm just asking you on your position on the protest. Protests don't increase the spread of the virus.
I didn't say that. You're putting words in my mouth.
No, I just want an answer to the question. Do the protests increase the spread of the virus?
I don't have any scientific evidence on anything. I can tell you that crowds are known, particularly when you don't have a mask, to increase the acquisition and transmission. No matter
so
what.
So you don't have a position on whether the protest increased the spread of the virus or don't increase the spread of the virus.
Ohio Republican Jim Jordan. Liberal Democrat Jamie Raskin of Maryland hit back, saying he's attended several Black Lives Matter protests himself and adding that churches can be super spreaders, unlike protests.
Limiting the number of people who could go to church to 100 were perfectly constitutional because that was the exact same rule that applied to lectures, concerts, movies, spectator sports, theatrical performances, political party gatherings, and so on. In other words, there was no religious discrimination taking place, which is why the Supreme Court rejected the claim, and there is no religious free exercise exemption to public health orders, as you were indicating, I think, Dr. Fauci. So the parties in the case cited numerous cases of church gatherings with people unmasked, singing, chanting, and so on, that became super spreader events. There is no religious immunity to this disease, and there is no free exercise exemption to universal public health orders. Now, as for protest, let us not confuse the issue. Whether your protest is a right-wing protest, like Boogaloo and Proud Boys and anti-public health order protesters, like the ones who threatened the life of Governor Whitmer and tried to shut down the Michigan legislature and succeeded in doing so, or it's the nonviolent assemblies of millions of people with Black Lives Matter across the country, the kind endorsed by our late beloved colleague John Lewis, the champion of nonviolence, the same rules must apply. If a jurisdiction has a six-foot rule and a masking rule, which I assume and hope every one of them does, it applies equally to everybody.
And that's Jamie Raskin, a liberal Democrat from Maryland. Fauci also said he had not seen any evidence hydroxychloroquine, a drug touted by Trump, is effective at preventing COVID-19 or minimizing its effects. Fauci said no randomized placebo-controlled trial, which is the gold standard, has showed the anti-malarial drug benefits COVID-19 patients. And in New York City, the number of positive coronavirus tests remain below 1%, well below the milestone necessary to continue gingerly reopening the region. New York City Department of Education Chancellor Richard Carranza says he plans to reopen the schools slowly and safely.
We will be asking staff to get tested in the days prior to school reopening. The city will prioritize free testing for school-based staff with 24-hour turnaround time results for at any of the 34 city-run testing locations. School-based staff members are also encouraged to opt into monthly COVID-19 testing, which is critically important. We are thoughtfully opening schools with physical distancing and cohorting of students requiring face coverings and thoroughly cleaning and disinfecting throughout the day and night. If an illness does occur, we will respond quickly, communicate clearly during investigations, and promptly to share decisions to quarantine classrooms or, if necessary, close schools.
And as New York City Department of Education Chancellor Richard Carranza, the city has a backup plan if a school shows evidence of the virus. Dr. Ted Long, director of the New York City Test and Trace Corps, said as a parent of a New York City student, he's putting safety first, especially if a case of COVID turns up in a school.
During the investigation, if it's relegated to one case, the school will remain open. And when the investigation concludes, the classroom and any close contact will quarantine for 2 weeks. Now, if there's more than one case in a school and it's not in the same classroom, during the investigation by the Test and Trace Corps and the Department of Health, the school will close for 24 hours. The reason for that is we want to keep everybody safe while we do the investigation. When the investigation concludes, one of two things will happen. The first outcome could be that the classroom, again, all of the students and the teacher, would quarantine for 2 weeks. That's the rule that's going to happen no matter what. And any close contacts identified from either of the two or more cases would also quarantine for 2 weeks, but the school can reopen. That would be outcome number one. The second outcome would be that if we believe there's transmission or risk of transmission in the school between those more than one cases, then the school has already been closed for at least 24 hours during the investigation. The school will remain closed, both the classrooms, which happens either way per our rule, but also the rest of the school, to ensure that everybody in the school can be safe and that everybody in the school will quarantine for the 14-day period.
Dr. Ted Long, director of the New York City Test and Trace Corps. And if the New York and if New York City and the rest of the country don't have enough to worry about, Hurricane Isaias is threatening to hit South Florida, scoot up the East Coast, and possibly scrape New York. Mayor de Blasio.
Anytime we see a hurricane coming, look, every one of us who went through Sandy, we never minimized the warning that a hurricane may be coming. I think we'll know a lot more in the course of the next 24 hours, and we'll have plenty of time in that case to give people appropriate instruction depending on what we learn.
Mayor de Blasio, the storm is currently southeast of the Bahamas, battering the island nation with 80-mile-per-hour winds. Isaias has already unleashed torrential rain, flash flooding, and power outages in Puerto Rico. Tropical storm warnings are up for much of the Dominican Republic and Haiti, too. And that's some of the news for Friday, July 31st, 2020. For the WBAI News from New York, I'm Paul D'Arienzo. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend.